And welcome to the program on this finally Friday. I'm meteorologist Justin Storm, alongside Ag Director Bridget Riedel, Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki, playing hooky somewhere out there, probably on a closed golf course, about to get picked up for trespassing. So if you've seen them, let them know we're looking for them, please. Bridget, how have you been lately?
Going well. You know what? Things over here are progressing. We are getting through harvest. Moving right along. I think with the cool down in temperatures, we're going to see more folks back out in the field for sugar beets. We still have flare-ups going on in the western part of the state. We got a little bit of wind that's picked up out there, but we are doing everything we can to get ahead of that. Containment grows a little bit more every day. So that's important.
Right on, right on. Well, hey, what do you got going on this weekend? Things have been all right, been better. It's shaking off a head cold, but looking forward to a weekend.
Well, and this weekend, tomorrow, in fact, many of us will be at Fargo Billiards and Gastro Pub because we have a brew fest going on. And those of us who, you know, our voices from WDAY and the flag, swing over, say hello, meet us all. Also, you're going to want to participate in bean bags, a dart tournament. There's food pairings to go along with a number of the beers that are available, and the Bison game will be on TV. That's why I'm going. I'm all ready for it.
There you go. Beer and football. Not much better than that. And free food.
You've been in the free food.
That is the best. Hey, we got some fun things coming up on the program today, Bridget. We got, I believe it's Anissa Hoffman and Craig Zimprich from NDSCS, correct? They're coming on at 1:20?
Yep. Yep, it's Craig Zimprich. In fact, I just got a message from Anissa. They are reconnecting. So Addison in our control room, just so you know, our guest is getting connected with us. They'll be ready for us at 1:20. They're going to talk about what the ag programs are doing down at the school in Wahpeton. They are State College of Science, and there's a lot happening as far as program expansion. So I'll be curious to hear what they've got to say. Additionally, for those of you who are thinking ahead about some fundraiser type activities when it comes to education in the state, you can go ahead and sign up to attend the North Dakota Farm Bureau Foundation's Harvest to Harmony Gala. That's going to be held next Friday, October 18th. It'll be at the Avalon in Fargo. It's a 5-course meal sourced from farmers and vendors in the area. There'll be the front fenders. There'll be a silent auction, and you'll be supporting initiatives through Farm Bureau, such as the Living Ag Classroom, teacher and ag student scholarships, and so much more. So if you're interested in attending, you can drop me an email, ag@flagfamily.com, and I will very happily share that sign up link for you so you could attend. And again, that is going to be next Friday, the Harvest to Harmony Gala. So yay for all those people that are going.
Yeah, for sure. And let's see, I was just kind of browsing through some of our ag topics we're going to try and get through the course of this hour, one of them being vet mental health training seminar. And custom harvesting documentary for high school students, but one from yesterday. And I believe 701X was a guest of ours either earlier this year or late last year. They were taking on a national cattle registries. Did you guys happen to hit that yesterday?
I don't remember if we talked about this yesterday. I mean, I hate to say it, but there are some days I talk about things 3 and 4 times, so I can't remember each time we do it on what show. But
oh yeah, I feel it.
701X is based right here in Fargo, and they are probably most well known for their ability to use RFID tags to track livestock. So they'll have virtual tags. They can do virtual fencing with them. But also what they've taken over is a beef breeds registry for a number of herds. Ooh. So just like when you have a dog in the American Kennel Club and you can do registry on them because of their outstanding genetics and, their family tree, so to speak, you can do that with cattle. And 701X is expanding their operations. They have finished their acquisition of Digital Beef, which was a registry platform out of San Antonio, Texas, which means 701X will now be in charge of the beef registries for a number of breeds, such as the Gelvie, the North American Limousine, American Shorthorn, the Maine Anjou, the Kianina Association, Black Hereford, Wagyu, Longhorns, the Brahmins, the Beefmaster, the Belted Galloway, and the Santa Gertrudis. So that's about 17 different breeds that they are now going to be handling. Very cool.
Wow, very cool. They just keep on going up and up and up over there at 701X. That's great to hear.
Appreciate the fact that they do such great work over there. So, okay, with the things that are going on this weekend weather-wise, I know we're anticipating a little bit more wind, which is unfortunate. We don't really need it, particularly in western North Dakota. What have you got? You got anything for weather that we should be aware of? Because I'm sort of curious.
I mean, nothing to really overly to be concerned about. Yeah, the winds do chirp back up as we head into Saturday or Sunday for us, a little earlier out in western North Dakota. But temperatures are going to be taking a dive. So although the winds do pick back up, the relative humidity values will actually go up a little bit with the cooler temperatures, since relative humidity is the amount of moisture in the air divided by the air temperature, or how much moisture the air could hold at that temperature. So the warmer it is, and usually the drier it is during the day and the cooler it gets at night, usually those relative humidity values still go up. Don't get me wrong, it's still elevated fire conditions, so that doesn't get rid of the threat. It just kind of slows it down if it were to go, or lessens the probability of things getting out of control. So for today, a little breezy out there. We're looking at wind right now. Give me a second. 15 miles an hour out of the north, so not terrible. And we'll see that kind of bouncing around 10 to 25 with the gust throughout the day, but it's mostly sunny. A lot of blue skies out there. Temperatures 62 right now. We'll level things off at 65 for a high today. For tonight, down in the upper 40s, mostly cloudy. There will be a few sprinkles, but it's insignificant. Don't bank on it really leading to anything, with light east-northeast winds and a few spotty showers tomorrow. Again, most of this is going to evaporate before it reaches the ground. More of them will be found of the north of Fargo, up in the northern valley, the northern half of Minnesota. So although a few sprinkles possibly, generally just a cloudy day tomorrow, a few breaks of sunshine, highs in the low 60s. So most of the day, we will be in the 50s for your Saturday afternoon. And as we head into Sunday, we'll see more sunshine, but the northerly winds will kick up 10 to 25, gusting as high as 35, with high temperatures only in the mid-50s. So most of the day, again, will be in the 40s to low 50s. So it's going to be kind of a cool weekend. Bust out the sweatshirts, the flannels. There we go. I put mine on today. And I'll probably keep it wearing it all the way into the beginning of next week, because temperatures don't rise out of the 50s until we head to Wednesday of next week, where we'll finally see some lower 60s building into the mid and upper 60s by the end of the week. Over that whole time period, it's going to be dry. Our next chance for rain isn't going to come until somewhere around next Friday, Bridget.
All right. And when it comes, I hope the chances increase all along through the week as those chances get bigger and better all the time. I know I'm asking for a lot. And I was on team no freeze until November 1, and I'm going to get close.
You sure will. Yeah, well, we might drop below freezing here on what would that be? Sunday night, Monday night, there will be some patchy freezing conditions, but as a whole, it'll just be a wider spread frost event with temps in the mid 30s. A few upper 20s are going to be possible here or there, mainly wherever the clearing takes place overnight. But as a whole, after that, we don't see another chance for frost or freezing temperatures in our area until the following weekend, Bridget.
Wow, that's pretty wild. I mean, really, that's a long time. So interesting enough to see. Okay, very good.
Well, the interesting thing is you think as the weather person, I would know this, but I actually don't, because I didn't go back and prep before the show today because I didn't think it was going to come up. But we had a frost advisory last week on the 5th of October, I think. Around there. Now, I don't know. I think it was the 4th, the night of the 4th. I don't think that we actually realized any frost that night. Now, if you did get frost in Fargo, you can call us on the Red Wing Shoe line. That's 701-293-9000 for our studio lines. And I'm just trying to pull this up here really quick on my monitor here. I don't think we actually had frost. Thursday night, the 3rd, we dropped down to a low of 35 on the 4th. And that Saturday on the 5th, we dropped down to 49. So although you can get frost at 37 degrees, I don't know if we had any.
I don't think
frost.
There was.
I think Friday would be our best shot. The morning of Friday would have been our best shot for seeing some frost at 35. But even then, that's still patchy frost. If we didn't get frost on the 5th, and areas did, but here in Fargo, the record, I think, is the 12th. I think for Cass County, but I'm pretty sure there were some spots in Cass that saw frost, but here in Fargo, I don't think we did.
I think we had some low-lying areas that did get touched by frost. Not necessarily here in this part of Cass County. And I only say that because at even the remote thought of frost, my pumpkins give up the ghost and they're still doing okay out there. So we'll see. I don't mean the actual pumpkins. I mean the pumpkin leaves on the vine. If those leaves are standing up off the vine, they'll just go and tip over.
Well, that's the funny thing is because I brought my plants in one night so far because I thought there was going to be frost. My flowers, I left the window boxes out because they're a pain to take down and they weigh 80 pounds. So I didn't feel like carrying two of those. And I left the garden uncovered as well. And everything is still kicking. Nothing has died off. So we haven't had any frost here in Grand Forks either. And I'll live in life on the edge, a whole year of growth, putting it all on the edge to see what'll happen.
Well, you keep holding on. You've still got time and it'll be okay.
We still got a few more days. I still got to actually harvest the rest of my tomatoes. I'm going to do that on Saturday because we'll probably hit freezing Saturday night here in Grand Forks or Sunday night. But outside of that, everything else has been picked and the garden is basically ready to just die off at this point.
I'm ready for my garden to die off. And I know I'll have some enthusiasm again in January for next year, but currently I'm ready to let it go. I'm good.
Yep.
It's been fun.
It can just stop anytime now. After doing, let's see. So I do my salsa in 12 pounds at a time. And I think I've made six, maybe seven batches of salsa so far. So I got a good 80 pounds of salsa in the cupboards.
Well, yeah.
I think I'm good till December.
I've got more to make. I just haven't quite begun to face it yet.
Best of luck. Well,
we'll get
while Bridget contemplates how she's going to finish making her salsa, we'll get caught up with the American Ag Network. And when we come back, we'll be joined with Anissa Hoffman and Craig Simprich from NDSCS. So stay tuned. Weather and Ag in Focus. We'll be right back.
And a welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. Glad you're here. We're trying to focus. It feels like there's a million different things going on. And whichever one of you listeners is trying to call me right now, hey, I'm on air. I'll have to fix that later. Thanks, though.
Back it off.
That's right. I do find it hilarious when somebody calls and I'm on air and they're like, hey, you busy? Yeah. So thanks for checking.
Nonetheless, one to two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, don't worry. And it's usually my family calling because apparently they don't know what I do. But oh well. So, anywho, to our sponsors for Here We Grow, we really appreciate all the work that they have put into helping us with our crop this year. We are combined; crop is off the field. It's now safely stored in a bin while we wait for our next decision of what we're going to do with our corn. And thank you to Pivot Bio. They made sure that we didn't run out of nitrogen, which was very important, especially early on as we were rather wet. We wanted to make sure we had available nitrogen for our plants and we didn't lose any to denitrification. Additionally, Fultz Buildings, if you're looking to build anything these days, if you want to do a shop, if you need a shop house combination, if you're doing some outbuildings, barns, machine sheds, give them a call because Fultz Buildings can help bring your dreams into reality. Well, some of those other folks that are helping bring dreams into reality are teachers and educators. And we have two of them joining us today, and that is Anissa Hoffman and Craig Zimprich. They are with North Dakota State College of Science in Wahpeton. Kids, how you doing today?
Great. How are you doing?
Fabulous. Okay. Good. Not everybody thinks about a state school of science as a college for ag education. We think about it for automotive, whether that's auto body, engines, diesel tech, but you guys have a whole different list of programs. What are some of the things that you're doing in your programming at the College of Ag?
Yeah, we got a fairly diverse offering, whether it be farm and ranch management, animal science, precision agronomy, precision ag technician, ag business. We just started an ag education, a two-year ag education program, and then setting up for transfer as well to our partner schools at like NDSU or SDSU, Crookston, that sort of thing.
So let's talk a little bit about each one of these. With your precision programs, don't y'all have a farm that you're running?
We do. We have a, I guess we call it a field, a total of approximately 90-acre field. And of that, we probably actively farm about 85 of those acres between alfalfa, corn, and beans. Was an interesting year this year, obviously, as many many felt. And so we didn't get to do as much as we wanted to it with the crops we had planned, but we were able to get some soybeans in, and we still have some cover crop, no-till area, and conventional tillage area, and we were able to at least get some forage barley on some of that, and still provide an educational opportunity, I think.
Okay, Anissa just very politely said this year was a bit of a dumpster fire, at least early on, especially in that Southern Valley area. Okay, let's be realistic. You didn't get to plant any sooner than any other farmer. How late was it? How much rain did you get? What did things look like throughout the season, and what lessons were learned in really making those hands-on decisions?
Well, I think we put the last seed in the ground on July 18th. And that was some forage barley, really as more of a cover crop than anything else. But last spring we thought we were good to go. The land seemed fit, and I went out there and cultivated, getting ready for Shander to put some corn in. And we had about a 10, 15, 20% chance of rain, and we caught 30 hundredths of rain that night, and it just never quit after that. So I think the beans got put in right around June 15th.
Yeah, just shy of that.
The rest of it, we were just trying to figure out barley. So, and those were probably even pushing it when we could get those into the ground in a reasonable time. That the piece of land, water doesn't move exceptionally well. We'll put it that way.
A lot of rain. And when you talk about the hands-on things that your students are doing when it comes to that field, that precision, was it start to finish? It was all in their hands to make the decisions and figure out how to get it done?
No, there's a number of people that kind of help us out. We've got an advisory committee for out there for that field. And they kind of try to provide us from a producer perspective what students should really be getting out of it, and help us make some of those decisions. However, we do a summer field day, and one of the things that we hadn't done, we only had beans in at that point, and we were trying to decide what to do. And so we actually had some experts come in and kind of talk through some options, and then the students kind of brainstormed and kind of worked together to help us figure out, if this was your farm, what would you do, and came up with some good ideas, anywhere from like a sweet corn patch, a pumpkin patch, to cover crops, or just saying, heck, let's go with it on corn. And so they were coming up with all kinds of unique ideas, I guess. So
when you get done at the end of the season, and first of all, are you done with harvest is probably my first question.
Yeah, we harvested beans on Tuesday, and those got sold, and so that pretty well wrapped up our year so out there.
So does that group of students who worked on this project this year look at the cash flow, the balance sheets, and start making some of the farming decisions of what'll happen on that ground next year?
We try to get our farm management instructors to build in some of that into their coursework and look at the financials. And right now we just had a turnover in that position. So they probably aren't doing as much of that right now, but it is a goal that they're usually working kind of hands-on and understanding some of the decision-making that goes into it and being able to see the real life, I guess.
I'll also say that last spring, in a couple of classes, I have a soil fertility class, and the students were part of developing fertility recommendations. We took soil test results, and the students look at the crop that we intend to go in and start to develop what they think would be the ideal fertility recommendation for that field. And in one of Chandra's classes, the students look at population differences. A little of that got, you know, kind of manipulated a bit because of the change in the growing season and the challenges that it gave us. But we still tried to do some variable rate populations just to see how plant architecture varies and maybe yield even at the end. So we're in the process of getting those yield maps and hopefully being able to look at those population differences. So trying to make it as much a learning experience as we can for the students in a variety of ways.
I see. Anissa, I'm going to jump in here for a second. Made a couple of points there in taking soil samples to determine fertility, and then you talked a little bit about population. I think we need to define what the two of those things are. When you're talking about fertility in soil, what exactly does that mean?
Well, we want to get an idea of how much fertilizer we want to add for the intended crop going in during the season. So initially our fertility plan is for the part of the field that's going to be corn and the part of the field that's going to be beans. We collect soil samples in the fall previous, and then the students look at what the soil test indicates as far as nutrient content. We look at what the crop going in the case of corn and beans, and where in that field we should put various levels of whether it be nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, sulfur, zinc, whatever we think the fertility needs are. And so the students were helpful in that.
Okay. And then in terms of population, I know what population is. I know Bridget does too, but a lot of our listeners are probably a little left in the dark here when you're talking about population. What is that, and what's the significance behind understanding what your population should be in a field?
Okay. Well, we look at predominantly seeds per acre, how many we intend to plant to hopefully optimize yield. You know, kind of the basic things. If you don't get the right amount of seed in the ground, you might not optimize the yield. Of course, there's a lot of environmental conditions and so forth in between that are going to ultimately affect that yield. And I think you guys are probably seeing that in your project.
Yes.
But that initial piece of starting off with the get the seed in the ground right at the right rate.
I see. All right. Well, I know we both got a bunch more questions. And if anybody is listening and you have a question, feel free to reach out. Give us a call on the Red Wing Shoe line, 701-293-9000. You can also reach us via email. That's weatherorag@flagfamily.com, and comment boxes there on Facebook, YouTube Live. We also stream each and every single day on Acres TV. We'll get caught up with bottom of the hour news, and we'll rejoin this conversation in just a moment, so stay tuned.
And hello, folks. It's Weather and Ag in Focus, and we're glad that you're here joining us. We have two guests on the line today, and that would be Anissa Hoffman and Craig Zimprick. They are both with North Dakota State College of Science, specifically talking about all the agriculture programs that they have. So, folks, one of the whole big topics that I wanted to make sure that we talked about when Anissa and I visited prior to the show today, ag education. Here's my unique question. As someone who majored in ag education at NDSU, I had to have a 4-year degree if I was going to teach in North Dakota. Can you describe how this is going to work, where you can do a 2-year program at North Dakota State College of Science and be able to teach? I need some details here.
Yeah. So this is really aimed at being a partnership with NDSU, maybe offering a place for students to get a start. There are some schools that will hire on kind of an alternative licensure with less than a four-year degree. But both me and Anissa being ag education folks as well, we think it's important to put highly qualified people into the classroom. So it's really just providing another on-ramp for students and then hopefully completing a four-year degree afterwards. But probably maybe something a little more unique here is I think we can help train some of those future ag teachers in maybe some of the shop type courses that they'll be expected to teach, where it's a little tougher at NDSU or some of the four-year schools to really get those hands-on by experts when we talk about things like welding and construction, maybe some electrical. If we can put those students in some of those introductory classes and get them some training before they move on to complete their four-year degree.
Okay, so that helps, Craig. I love that you're going to explain this to me like I'm a fifth grader, which was sort of how I went through college. Okay, so classes I needed to take in ag education, like I had industrial welding. There was horticulture. There were crop and weed science, animal science, ag mechanics. Those are all still in the curriculum that you're doing at NDSCS, or which ones would you separate and say you're going to do at NDSCS versus what might be done differently at, say, NDSU, SDSU, et cetera?
So they've got an opportunity here. They could take, you know, precision ag, plant science, soil science, animal science, all of the ag type coursework, along with probably with the exception of the horticulture. And then they could do, like you were talking about, the welding and some of those coursework, the shop type stuff. They could do that here. What they're going to probably be expected up at NDSU are probably a few of the higher level, maybe a genetics or mm-hmm. some of that coursework. And then a lot of their teaching, their education courses would be taken up at NDSU. So,
okay. And I will tell you that for students who are considering this particular curriculum and this major, you come out of that program so well-rounded. I certainly want to encourage folks to teach, because we have a gigantic ag education shortage in North Dakota for teachers. But even to just have all this background for other careers, you know, have you guys noticed that as well, that ag ed teachers are in demand because of the things they can do due to the curriculum they came through?
Oh, I think absolutely. You know, when you have a broad background, plus maybe the idea that you can relay a thought to your customer or the student, I think in a lot of roles that becomes the ability to communicate becomes a desired trait and something that in a lot of areas maybe they're lacking.
It seems with the shortage of teachers, not only in North Dakota, but in most all states, this alternative licensure process has gained more and more steam. And so that's where some of the states, and North Dakota being one of them, looking to say, well, do you at least have a two-year degree preparing you for teaching? So we're going to put some education courses in along with this, but get them that head start, and then the school district could choose to hire them and continue that certification process as they develop further as a teacher.
This is maybe going to, I don't know if you guys necessarily have the complete answer to this, but do students through your program still do a student teaching of some sort, or are they supervised once they get out and are accredited at a school and teaching? How does that part work?
Well, I think going back to it, ideally the student is going to complete a four-year teaching degree, and that's where the student teaching would come in, is when they're completing. On the alternative licensure, I believe if somebody does that, then the school is going to have to come up with a plan with supervision, and that's probably going to be through a school like NDSU or something of that nature. So there would be something there, but with the alternative licensure, I think that can look a lot of different ways, and know, I'm sure there's a lot of different opinions on that as well. But
our specific program, we won't, if I'm speaking correctly, we won't have in our 2-year program a requirement for student teaching. There will be classroom observation and assisting in a classroom as part of an, I guess we're calling it type of internship, but we won't have formal student teaching, if you will. And you know, you've been through that process, so you kind of know what that entailed.
Yeah, and I just want to give a great big shout out to my supervising teacher when I went out to student teach in Pelican Rapids, Minnesota, and he has now since retired. But Bill Januszewski was fantastic to learn under. So it's too bad Bill retired, because students got a lot out of being in his classroom and then also being a supervised teacher in his classroom. And one last thing when it comes to the ag ed, I think, Lanissa really had a great segue there when she talked about similar to an internship. You guys do a lot of internships with your students. Do you want to highlight some of those and, you know, their areas of study and where kids are picking up those internships with employers and so forth, what they're getting out of it?
Yeah, I think that really is one of the strengths of our program. We start early on where businesses come in and recruit and explain their internship opportunities, and students do a goal, you know, they do some interviews to learn about the areas that they want to do and then start setting goals for their internship, because we really believe that an intentional internship with some goals is pretty important for the outcome. And the range of places where these students go, from anywhere from plot technicians to field scouts to just agronomy interns. Now with our precision ag technician program going into the equipment dealerships, any of the livestock enterprises, whether it be a ranch, feed sales, large dairies that are starting to move in and things of that nature. So we see a lot of different placement where students go, and because every student has something different that they want to get out of it, and where they want to go. And so we just try to help facilitate getting there, but with a lot of preparation ahead of time, so that they're getting out of it what they want and what they need in order to advance their career goals. So yeah, this year I suspect we'll go out and have about 70 students on internship. So yeah, it'll be a wild summer, I think.
I bet it will. All right. We're in the career fair season. So for students or parents who are listening and want their children to consider coming to school at North Dakota State College of Science, what's the recruitment process? Where should they find out more information from all of you? And will you be at any career fairs coming up?
Oh, yeah, we'll. I think I just signed up for one in Lisbon, and we'll be in Fargo later on. But if anybody wants to get more information, the best way to start is at the NDSCS website and working with our enrollment services folks to set up a tour. And those tours will come and visit with an ag faculty. Their likely advisor is who they would visit with to learn more about the programs. And then from there, applying and trying to find scholarships and things of that nature. And working through the application process, which I think is fairly straightforward, and then getting them a schedule for next year. So
thank you, Craig and Anissa, for coming in to spend some time with us. Anytime that you have new developments in the ag department down there in Wahpeton, let us know. We'd like to make sure to highlight that for all of our listeners.
If I could say real quick, Bridget, we're pretty excited because sometime next spring and definitely by the fall, we'll be moving into our new Yagi Family Farms Agriculture Center building. We're really expanding the opportunity for some applied learning that's going to, I think, be a real advantage in our program. So we're pretty excited. We're in the middle of the building project now and trying to envision what it's going to look like when it's done. So that's exciting.
Will there be a grand opening day so I can come down and be touristy?
We will sure let you know. We don't know that exact date yet, but when we do, we'll let you know.
Heck, Bridget, we'll give you a personal tour.
Sign me up. I'd love to come down. I enjoy every time I get invited to do things with your school, so just let me know when I can be there.
Sounds great. Sounds great. Thanks for having us today, Bridget.
Yeah, we sure appreciate it.
Thanks, you guys. All right. To everyone, don't go anywhere. We still have some headlines and some weather to cover, and we want to make sure you're all prepared for the weekend. So we'll be back.
And welcome back to the program. Thanks for rejoining us, 1:52 on this finally Friday. And Bridget, I don't know about you, but I'm really looking forward to a nice, refreshing weekend with some, you know, I'm not looking forward to the cooler temperatures, but I will be enjoying the cooler temperatures. I think more than anything, just a couple of days to just unwind from a week and just try to relax.
I think that a lot of folks are hoping for that. They're hoping that the wind speeds do not pick up in the way that it was mentioned. I've had some points made by a couple of folks that are out to the west. Some things, if you are in the midst of all of the wildfire situation, the fires are not completely under control yet. There have been those that have continued to re-spark, if you will. And with the wind coming up this weekend, I just had a message from a college friend out there. They started watering the lawn around their house. They're trying to green up what little grass that they could right around the house, and they're removing all the dead flowers, plants, shrubs, et cetera, because they don't want anything that could be considered kindling right up against their home. And also, if you have been out there, NTSU is putting together some information that they're gathering from Colorado State. You have to check, or you should be checking your well water after fires, because your water quality can go down. And if that is the situation, whether it's human or animal consumption, you do want to start thinking ahead about well testing.
Huh. Good test, or good tip there, Bridget. I wouldn't have thought of something like that.
I had zero idea you would have to check your wells for water quality after a wildfire. But apparently, you know, Colorado, they deal with them on a very regular basis, and this is a common practice out there.
I'm trying to think of why. I'm trying to think of the physics behind this, of why a fire at the surface is going to contaminate well water, which is generally, I mean, wells are fairly deep most of the time, but
I had to go look for
plant
this
matter.
Except when they're using not just water, but fire retardants to put the fires out.
Oh, sure.
And those retardants, they can land in stock ponds, stock dams, water tanks. And also, if depending on if that pond feeds into an underground well, it can take that contaminant down into the well. So that's their concern. And I don't know if fire retardants were used. Most of the time, what I have seen in the photos and so forth I've been getting from Western North Dakota is they're just using water, like off the lakes and so forth out there. But that may or may not be the case in every situation. So heads up once again. I also was given some figures. So for those who've asked, you know, what if I want to donate? How much could I donate? Mm-hmm. If you want to donate a truckload of hay, the transportation cost, this is not about the hay, this is not about the straw that might be on the truck, just the transportation cost from the Red River Valley to the affected areas is about $700 a load. So if you're looking to donate, put that into consideration. Can you help with part of a load, a whole load for the transportation costs, et cetera? And if you're looking for a place to donate, there are a number of funds set up. And I think also one of our favorite charities would be Farm Rescue, and they would be another place that you could go to immediately to make some of those donations.
Yeah, I'm surprised that it's $700. I guess it makes sense, though. You don't really think about the transportation fees associated with something like that.
Yeah, it's a lot of diesel. You don't get great mileage with a heavy loaded truck.
No, you definitely don't. I know that one firsthand. Hey, let's talk about one of our ag topics here. And this was a custom harvesting documentary that was made by some high school kids. What do you know about this, Bridget?
Very cool. There were three kids that worked in conjunction with the Fort Hays State University. They have something called the Tiger Media Network, and their student documentary called Life on the Harvest Run. This captures the story of two Kansas-based custom crews. The students went ahead and did interviews with folks who are either 20 to 91 years old and everything in between who have been custom harvesters. And they wanted to talk about the real life situation and what the working conditions are like, how they get the harvest done, the places that they've traveled to. And if you want to watch Life on the Run, on the Harvest Run, you can see it. It's on YouTube. It is at the Tiger Media Network on YouTube. So go check it out. I think it's a pretty cool deal that these high school kids took it upon themselves to make a documentary. Really unique job.
That is. It is super cool. How about mental health training seminars for the vets?
Okay. Large animal veterinarians especially are heavily affected by what's been happening in Western North Dakota. Their lives are highly stressful. They have to make decisions for a patient who can't talk, and it's often very emotional with those pet owners or pet parents, as some call them. There is a free seminar. It's put on by Rural Minds out of Western New York, and they would like very much for you to attend. If you want to email me, ag@flagfamily.com, I'll share the link with you, because this is about suicide prevention and mental health stress relievers and techniques that you can be getting when you are a large animal veterinarian, and it applies to vet technicians as well. So give me an email, and I'll be happy to send that your way.
There you go. And here's a rundown on your forecast here before we call her quits here on a finally Friday. Temperatures outside at 64 right now. We'll level things off in the mid-60s for this afternoon. Wind, it's gusting to 23, and we'll see it bouncing around 10 to 25, sustained with those gusts up to 25. Out of the north, with temperatures sliding down into the upper 40s tonight, skies will go mostly cloudy. The wind will lighten up, and it stays fairly light on Saturday, just generally more clouds than sun, a few sprinkles out there, low 60s for high temperatures, and we'll slowly cool things down to the mid-50s on Sunday, with overnight temperatures Sunday night and Monday night right around that freezing mark. So for Bridget and I, we appreciate you joining us today. We plan on being back on Monday from 1 to 2 o'clock in the afternoon. This is Weather and Ag in Focus, and the Jay Thomas Show is coming up next.